Cassandra Montag, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So first, I want to ask you about your childhood. You grew up in Buffalo County, right, outside of Kearney?
That's right.
What can you tell me about your childhood and how it influenced your writing today?
Yeah. So, you know, I spent a lot of time outside. So, like you mentioned, I grew up outside of Kearney. We were up north on an acreage and we lived by a creek. And I spent so much time just running around the creek trying to build forts. And I think that really imbued me with this love of nature and this interest in the natural world. And I also really grew up in these sort of frontier stories that captivated me, I think in part because we were a little bit out in the country. And it reminded me so much of that time when people were coming through and trying to settle Nebraska and all of the inherent conflicts with that.
What were some of those stories?
You know, the first thing that I think of is actually a book that I read more recently, which is Dust Bowl Diary. And it's a book that takes place during the Dust Bowl. And I think that's a time period that, like the time we're in now, was so devastating and was a time when people really needed hope but perhaps found didn't find it in very many places. And those kind of stories, they stay with me because of the way that people were able to persevere in the midst of sort of setback after setback and that grinding sort of pressure of daily life, the way it can become so difficult. And I think, you know, when you read those stories, you find these transcendent moments that are able to rise above that sort of continuous difficulty that people can be mired in when they're living through a really hard era.
You obviously have an interest in stories of survival.
Yeah.
Triumph of the human spirit, especially as it relates to overcoming natural disasters. Why does that interest you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, like we started with my childhood, part of it, I think, is that sort of time spent in the natural world and just thinking about how incredibly violent and unpredictable the natural world is. And that the story, to me, the story of humankind is a story of struggle and survival because of sort of the unpredictability and the violence of nature and the ways in which we can try to work together with nature and how I think there have been a lot of missteps along the way with mankind essentially, you know, trying to subdue nature to his own will and that not working out quite the way that we expect. And I think that there are a lot of surprises along the way when you try to do that. And those surprises can, you know, really be the heart of different narratives.
Your main character, Myra, her most important descriptor is mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was it like for you to write about this really brutal, harrowing experience of motherhood while a young mother yourself?
Yeah, it was intense, you know, and it was an intense period of my life because I was busy trying to do a lot of things. And but I think maybe the greatest gift of that was that writing this book while I was a young mother myself is that it enabled me to try to make some of the more quiet moments in the book more true and to imbue the book with this sort of tenderness because, like you said, it is incredibly harrowing. It's an adventure story. It's a bit of a thriller. You know, there's a lot of difficulties the characters face, but I also wanted there to be these sort of pockets where the characters get to breathe a little and they get to take comfort in each other. And Myra has a great depth of love for her children, and her love for her children is the heart of this story. And that gives her, you know, this sort of perspective that enables her to see beyond the immediate difficulty that she's in. And that perspective to me, you know, kind of seeing that through Myra, it helped me to have perspective in my own life. And it's what sort of saved me from that sort of daily grind that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, there's, like you said, there's a lot of space in this book. There are a lot of moments for contemplation, and I think there have to be,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly, because if it's just one terrible thing after another, that would be depressing, and I didn't want it to be depressing. I knew that moments of the book were going to be dark and bleak, but I also knew that I needed these moments of light and joy, and I think, you know, having Pearl, her daughter, in the book really brings that sort of joy to life, because children do exhibit this sort of hope for the future and hope for humanity, and I loved being able to put that in there to give, you know, the book just a little bit of a lighter tone despite the darkness.
Pearl is a she's kind of a weird child. Yeah. But then I guess who isn't?
Yeah.
But she does have moments of joy. She has her snakes.
Mm-hmm.
When Myra makes her way onto the ship, without giving any spoilers, she finds a little community of people who love her yeah. and find ways to make her happy.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that was another really important development in the book is when Myra and Pearl join that other ship. And, you know, Pearl is able to find a little bit of a community because before that they had been just mired in isolation for so long. And to me, yeah, kind of like you mentioned, it was a great chance to explore another side of her character that was maybe a little bit more playful because she was around these other people.
You, when you were writing this book, I don't want to say you were a stay-at-home mother because you had a job while you were writing this book, but it was you at home with your children, right, while your husband had a more traditional 9-to-5. Did any of that inspire these descriptions of Myra's isolation with her own daughter?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's actually the first time I've been asked that, and it's true. I did feel very isolated during that time of my life because my husband was actually a medical resident, and so he was working like 80 hours a week. So he was gone evenings and weekends as well as during the day. And so I was very much, you know, just homebound with an infant and a toddler. And I did feel pretty isolated. And so that, you know, that definitely influenced, I think, some of Myra's struggles. And maybe that goes back to why, you know, when I was talking about earlier, like needing a greater perspective was so important to me. Because when life becomes really difficult, it can be hard to imagine it getting better, and it can be hard to imagine a break for you coming. And so, you know, trying to step back and realize that my life is not always going to be exactly like this was so helpful for me to actually be able to enjoy the stage of life that I was in.
And also, I guess I'm not a mother, but I can imagine that being stuck at home with two very young children would, for all its joy, would also present a lot of challenges. But at the same time, at least the world hasn't ended. At least you're not trapped on a small ship, you know, afloat in the middle of nowhere.
Right. No, that's kind of funny that you mentioned that because it's true. It's like, you know, even though things were difficult, I was also spending time in this world that was more difficult because Myra's journey is much more harrowing than anything I've ever experienced. And so that actually gave me a little bit of a reprieve, almost this reminder that, yeah, things are difficult, but they could be worse, and there are things to be grateful for right now. And I think that's part of the draw, actually, of post-apocalyptic fiction, is that it gives us this chance to see how much more difficult life can be and to appreciate the things that have not yet been taken away from us. You know, like being able to take trips to the grocery store, things that are very simple like that. In a lot of post-apocalyptic fiction, that's taken away, and it reminds you to be grateful for it in everyday life now.
I absolutely agree with that. Although, right now...
Right now, it's kind of getting close to certain post-apocalyptic
situations. I
would be
very grateful for a normal trip to the grocery store right now.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. Your next novel, as I understand it, takes place in Nebraska, more so than this one. Myra and her family lived there before the water came. And your next book is a mystery, and it takes place in the Sand Hills, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What is it about the Sand Hills, which are a beautiful area, of course, and loved by people all over the world, that inspires you to write about them?
You know, I went to the Sand Hills first when I was a child with my father. He's a painter, and he was painting landscapes at the time. And, you know, I found them so enchanting then, and I think that's really stayed with me. There's something about this landscape that's so desolate, and yet it has kind of hidden life because there are a lot of animals that make their home there. And so I think that that's part of the draw. I'm also drawn to landscapes where you see the wildness of nature where civilization has not yet encroached upon it. And so, you know, after the flood takes place after a global flood. And so obviously, you know, that's this sense of like nature reclaiming herself. But then this next novel, it takes place where civilization has not yet really been established, at least not, you know, in an urban sense. And so I think it's that wildness that I'm really attracted to. And I feel like, you know, we were talking in the beginning about survival stories, and I think survival stories can really shine in those sort of environments that feel both, like, desolate but also beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, even when Myra's at sea, there are still she fishes, of course, that's her trade.
Yeah.
And there are storms and there are birds, and it's desolate but rich in a way.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it.
I want to read a little bit where Marjan is talking about grief. And she says, I keep thinking grief feels like climbing a staircase while looking down. You won't forget where you've been, but you've got to keep rising. This book is about grief as much as it is survival. What do you draw from to write about that?
I think of grief as something that everyone has to deal with on some level and at some point in your life. You know, some people have to deal with grief at a much younger age. And so it's always captivated my imagination, the sense of how do people cope with loss and keep going. I think part of it comes from this sort of sensitivity of being aware of how easy it is for people to be taken from you, how easy it is to lose people because life is precarious. And, you know, one side of that is appreciating and being mindful of, you know, beautiful moments that you can share with someone, but then the other side of that is truly frightening. And so I think that, you know, in this book, like you mentioned, characters have lost loved ones. Myra has lost Ro when the book begins. And there's also this sort of global sense in which humanity has lost the earth. You know, they've lost, like, the literal earth because of the flood. And so, I mean, I think I've just been really captivated by both the beauty of, like, not wanting to lose something, but then the terror of knowing how precarious everything is.
Are you the kind of writer who can stand to read your own work looking back?
I do. Well, I end up having to read it, you know, when I give readings. And so I'm used to certain passages that I select because, you know, you always have to be careful not to, you don't want to spoil, you know, the ending or something. But I can't read through the whole thing cover to cover, because while I'm really proud of this book, it's, you know, when you write something, by the time it's published, sometimes it's years after you originally wrote it, and, you know, you've gone on and changed as a person. And so I think that there are things that I would maybe go back and look at and just wonder, like, huh, I wonder if I would have written that differently now. And it might just be a little bit too irritating, I suppose, to not be able to go back and actually change something.
Irritating is a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is your debut novel, of course. A lot of your writing career before this has been writing poetry. How does your poetry writing process differ from writing fiction?
So with fiction, I have to think a little bit more about structure and plotting, especially because it's so much longer. With fiction, I also have to think a lot more about character development. When I write poetry, I do tend to write from a character or, like, a speaker who's different than myself. I sort of invent, like, a persona that is speaking in the poem, but it doesn't always require the same level of characterization that you would need in, you know, a novel-length manuscript. So I think of poetry now, the way I write poetry is I often can write drafts very quickly, and then I will go back and revise them, whereas with fiction, there's a bit more research involved early on, a bit more planning. So it's definitely, I would say, more methodical.
Yeah, and you've talked about your research process for this book in other interviews, but you mentioned you were seasick in one of them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you were to live in this post-apocalyptic universe, you would not be a Myra character.
Oh, no. I wouldn't. It's funny because I've had people say before that when they read the book, they think that I might, like, they don't know me, but they imagine that I might be like Myra. And it couldn't really be further from the truth. I mean, there may be certain aspects of her character that I was able to weave in, you know, like her motherhood and her love for her children. But her ability to you know, sail and fish, and also her fighting instincts, I certainly don't have any of those. I mean, I am kind of getting into fishing now. It's one of my hobbies because I take my sons fishing, but I'm not a real fisher, not like Myra is.
So was that the biggest challenge for you writing this book, writing the descriptions of sailing and fishing?
You know, interestingly, that I would say maybe the plotting was the hardest, because I was trying to write something that felt both had emotional depth but was fast-paced enough to feel like a thriller as well. So I think trying to combine those two things was difficult. The fishing and the sailing was really fun to research, maybe in part because, you know, we were talking earlier about being homebound with my kids. It offered me this sort of escape, you know, to feel like I was in a different place. It felt very escapist. And so that was really fun. And I also could write about sailing and feel like I was on the ship without the seasickness. So that was nice.
Yeah, that's a good perk. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you are able to leave your house, where are your favorite spots to write?
Yeah. So I often write at home, but yeah, when I leave, there's a place in Florence. I was living in Florence at the time when I wrote this, and I think it's called No More Empty Cups. It's a little coffee shop up in Florence, and I love that place. So I like to go there. I also spend a lot of time going on walks around Hummel Park and N.P. Dodge Park, so kind of like up in North Omaha, different parks, because I'll just take a little notebook with me and jot down notes while I'm walking, and that really helps to get things flowing. Sometimes I have to get away from a computer screen. I feel like that can sort of exhaust me after a while. And so if I need to get things flowing, I need to sometimes just get physically moving.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like nature is still something that is creatively helpful for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it just kind of, it loosens me up a little bit. And and I feel like that sort of calm helps me make different connections that I maybe wouldn't otherwise make.
I of course want to talk about the TV rights, the option, which congratulations. I know you sold that very soon after selling the book itself.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So you probably can't give us a lot of details right now. I know a lot of things are on hold. Are you involved in the production? Are you writing any teleplays or are there plans to?
Right. So I'm not doing any writing right now. There's a writer sort of showrunner attached to it. And so she's the one who's right now working on a script. And so my role is right now it's considered an executive producer, which is essentially like a consultant. So like I would review scripts or they'd be sent to me. And so they're involving me in the process in that way. But like you mentioned, everything is pretty halted right now.
Yeah. And is the showrunner Linda Wolverton or?
That's right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She, of course, did Beauty and the Beast. She did Alice in Wonderland, kind of dark fairy tales. And when I read that, it was kind of surprising because this isn't a mystical story.
Right.
What about Linda Wolverton do you think makes her a good fit to adapt this story?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, like you said, I was a little surprised at first, too, just in that I think of my novel as being a little grittier, like a bit more realism, whereas a lot of her work has that the mystical quality you mentioned or a little bit more fantastical. Whereas, even though the global flood in mine, even though that part's fantastical, everything else is presented in a very realistic, sort of gritty way. And so I think what makes her such a great fit for it is really her understanding of character. And she does such a tremendous job, particularly bringing, female characters to life in multifaceted ways. And so that they're not just the heroine, they're not just the bad guy or the villain. They're complex people with really complex motives. She brings this extra layer of sort of depth because of like the detail, this sort of observation I think that she's able to bring to life, for these characters. So that's one of the reasons I was just so excited when she signed on. I'm really thrilled and grateful that she's working on it.
Is there a timeline at all for it? It's going to be Apple TV, right?
Right, that's right. Yeah, and so there's no timeline yet that I've heard of. I do know that, so before the coronavirus hit, before the pandemic, I think that like they were going to try to take it to Apple and have some meetings in the spring, but then all of those were canceled and everything. So I can't really give any updates beyond that.
I know Margot Robbie and her production company had also expressed interest.
Yeah, so what had happened was they had expressed interest and wanted to be the production company to option it. It turned out that, we went with Chernin, but then Margot Robbie's production company partnered with Chernin. So they are partnering with them to try to bring it to the screen.
And there are maybe whispers of her as Myra?
That, exactly. Yeah, whispers is a good way to put it because it's so hard to really nail these things down until it's actually filming. But she has expressed interest, but, it's a bit too early to say because, who knows what the schedule would be like when it comes out. And so, I really can't comment on casting per se, but I do know she's incredibly excited about the story. So whether she's able to star or just be a production partner, she's pretty excited about it.
This book is not, it's not feel good, but it is hopeful.
Yeah.
Are you hopeful about the state of the world right now?
I try to be. Yeah, I think I am. I'm hopeful in the sense of trying to take the long view. I think it can be easy to get caught up in the minutiae of life, and especially the negativity that is really permeating so many different areas of society right now, that it can be hard to feel like there's even a reason to be hopeful. So I think of hope less as sort of a judgment of a certain situation, saying like, I'm hopeful because everything's fine. It's not that. I think of hopefulness as more of a stance against despair, saying that I'm not going to give into despair. I'm going to believe things can change. I'm going to believe that I can be a player in that change. So I am a hopeful person in that way, but I think of hope as a choice that I'm taking, not just like a sort of butterfly feeling, if that makes sense.
It's political hopefulness.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.